This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. It's a new week, a new year, and the first episode of Market Talk for 2024. In this programme, we'll be mulling over what asset classes did well in 2023 and what didn't. We'll be looking at what to expect on the US job numbers front, and while risk assets have been full of festive cheer in the Western world, we'll be wondering where next for equities in China. So, hosting the podcast from a very stormy UK is me, Frances Watson, but refreshed and raring to go from somewhat sunnier climes, Ben Bennett, who joins us from Hong Kong. Ben, Happy New Year from the UK. I know it's not Chinese New Year yet, but Happy New Year from us. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Happy New Year to you as well. Yeah, it's we had a cold warning for Hong Kong just before Christmas. Actually, it's it dipped down to below 20 degrees. So the official weather people put out a weather warning on my phone saying you've got to wrap up warm. So I fled to Thailand for Christmas where it was 30 degrees. That was much better.
Okay. That really must be hard for you, Ben. I won't tell you about my journey, which took four hours yesterday because there's seven trees on the line and someone's roof. But hey, let's go to the stock markets now and look at quite a good 2023 in the end, wasn't it? I mean, maybe we could kick off with what went well for equities and bonds.
It's basically an amazing November and December. I mean, it was pretty average up until that point. And it's quite useful when you look at markets on a spreadsheet and you can just have a look at 2 months worth of data and just look at the changes, which I'll give you some indication of what happened over those 2 months, because it was the Fed, if you remember, the US Federal Reserve, that had their meeting at the end of October, beginning of November, and that sort of turned markets positively. And then, reinforced it in December, and that sort of led to even more rally. So over those 2 months, which 10-year treasury yields, which had been at levels that were high enough to start strangling the economy, strangling asset classes over the summer, if you remember. But over those 2 months, the 10-year treasury yield fell about 1% from roughly 5 to 4%.
Yeah, phenomenal.
So that's a big move. Yeah, exactly. And that's the same. That's 10-year treasuries. That's US. It's a similar move for gilts in the UK, for bunds in Germany, etc. Similarly, big moves. And as well, because of the Fed's, I guess, dovish pivot, we can talk about that in a second, the dollar, the currency also weakened in value because, you know, the US Federal Reserve was getting less hawkish, interest rates are going down, and the US are maybe less reason to hold dollars. So the dollar weakened about 5% if you look at the DXY over that period as well. So another big move. And that combination of lower yields and a weaker dollar just means that it's cheaper to borrow dollars. And that's good news for everyone who's borrowed money. So companies, for example, the investment grade credit universe did really well over this period. So as well as interest rates going down, credit spreads, which is the interest rate over and above the government bond yield, they fell for investment grade US about 30 basis points, so 0.3%, high yield, and over another 1%, so 1.14% fall in credit spreads. So that double whammy of positivity over those 2 months. And then if you look at equity markets, again, this is all positive news. The S&P was up 14% over 2 months, which is quite a good year, isn't it? But that happened in 2 months. Yeah. NASDAQ up 17%, Euro stocks 11%. I can go on, but you know, everything really strong end to the year, which meant that the year as a whole was actually a pretty good one.
And how was, and you mentioned the dovish pivot, I think that everyone then christened it, and got terribly excited about falling rate expectations for the year. Now, in the cold light of day, and we've had all the turkey and all the festivity and the hangovers have set in, do we still feel that the Fed is going to be as generous as it might be?
Well, I mean, everyone's still pondering exactly what they've done. And it's going to take a little bit of time for it to settle down. We actually today, as we're taping on Wednesday, and we're going to get the minutes from the last Fed meeting, which was this dovish pivot. So we might get a bit more information, then we'll get some speakers, and then the next Fed meeting is at the end of January. So again, we'll get more information. But right now, what seems to have happened in the latest meeting in the middle of December, is that the Federal Reserve looked at markets, looked at investors and said, yeah, you're right that interest rates should have fallen over the last couple of months. We agree with that. We probably will cut interest rates in 2024. They signal that they, on a median likelihood, they'll cut interest rates 3 times 25 basis points, so 0.75%. That's their expectation for 2024. They said, yeah, we will do that. And that's despite us projecting a soft landing. So projecting that the economy will still be okay and that inflation will come down gradually, but not all the way down to target. So it's almost like their reaction function changed. I think we, like everyone else, like a lot of other people, thought that the Fed would only cut interest rates when there's a recession or once inflation is totally beaten. But they're sort of saying that, no, we'd have this middle ground, that we'd start cutting interest rates sort of preemptively, even if inflation hasn't come down all the way, because we want to, well, you know, we think that interest rates are a bit too high. And that change in the way that we perceive them, and actually I do think it's the change, it is a change from the Fed, is pretty important. That means, I think, and our economists think this as well, it does mean that the chances of a recession next year are lower, because they're saying that they're going to get ahead. Even if they're, you know, if the economy's slowing, we're going to start cutting interest rates early. So the chances of a recession have fallen a bit. And also, if there is a recession, it probably won't be as bad, because they'll be cutting interest rates even before the recession, and they'll presumably accelerate that if there is a recession. It does probably also increase the chances that they light a fire under the economy and it gets going again. You know, if they start cutting interest rates and it turns out to be too early, the growth could start to accelerate again. So it decreases the chance of recession, it decreases the depth of recession, but it does increase the chances that we get a recurrence of that higher for longer, that interest rates that we had over the summer, where interest rates start going up and we all worry that,
Are we in uncharted waters?
Uncharted waters. I mean, all of this is unprecedented. That's the word that's been used most for the last three, four years, isn't it? So definitely it's very unusual what we're seeing here. And we're going to have to see more information before we can come to a conclusion. I think that's absolutely right. But the market reaction, the investors' reaction is fair enough that it's very positive for risk assets, because it's lowering that chance of a recession.
But that view isn't really shared here in England or in the rest of Europe, because the statements from the BOE, Bank of England, and the European Central Bank were a little bit more hawkish in nature, weren't they?
Yeah, we had that flurry at the beginning, sort of middle of December, of every central bank coming out. As you say, the ECB and the Bank of England weren't as dovish. They still are on the same mantra of, we need to beat inflation. We're not there yet. We're going to keep interest rates high. That what everyone had thought the Fed was doing as well. But because the US is, you know, the dominant world global economy, and because US dollar assets are the dominant assets, we saw UK European assets also being swept up in this positivity. And to your question, a couple of minutes ago, about what might happen over the next couple of weeks. Well, you know, if the Fed comes out and said, you've misunderstood, you know, we're not going to change our reaction, we still want to get inflation down. We actually have some interesting data coming up in the next week or so. We could talk about it in a second, but we've got a payrolls, US job data, we've got US inflation. If that turns out to be really strong, then the Fed might say, yep, the economy is too strong, we're not going to cut interest rates, and we're back to square one. So, you know, what's this space?
Yeah, all right. Yeah, well, as you say, we will talk about that in a minute. But let's just turn to the current thinking now, Ben. And of course, one market that didn't enjoy all the fun of the fair was China. And we've just heard from President Xi in his New Year address. Surprisingly candid, actually. I don't know much about it, but I know you will do. But seeing how it's been a tough year for the consumer, and no signs, of course, of a manufacturing rebound in China yet. So what are the implications there then? I mean, equity's very depressed. Is it more of the same?
Yeah, I mean, I reeled off all those wonderful numbers for November, December, everywhere else, but actually Chinese equities were down in November, December. I mean, it's comical almost how much China has underperformed. Given, you know, this time last year, We were discussing the reopening, COVID reopening in China, all the positivity. It almost seemed like a certainty, and this is why investing is never a certainty, isn't it? But it seemed like a certainty that China would have a good 2023, and it turned out absolutely the opposite in terms of the investment market. Yeah, President Xi came out with a very similar statement to what has been coming out from officials over the last couple of months, which is, you know, we're going to look to improve the economy, look to try and get things going. Admitting that things haven't been particularly strong this year, but without specific policies and without specific money to reignite the economy, that's what's been lacking. And without that, we know that the property sector in particular is weighing on growth and manufacturing. The data we've just had over the last couple of days remains quite weak. We know that property sales remain quite weak. Again, this is all, nothing's changing. I have said over the last few months that valuations relative to the rest of the world are incredibly depressed, and sentiment is incredibly depressed. And I think we can use the word incredibly because it has been such a prolonged period of underperformance that, and it won't take much for this to turn around. And maybe we're all sitting here looking at each other saying, well, it's a slam dunk that China will have a bad 2024, just like we said that it was going to have a good 2023, and we could all turn out to be wrong, couldn't we? So perhaps the contrarian trade is the one to do here. Who knows?
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? But you've talked about China valuations there. For the rest of the developed world then, Ben, I mean, in terms of, and given the sharp rally in terms of bonds and equities, where do we go from here in terms of valuations? I know we've seen a little bit of profit taking already start of the new year. What are your feelings then in terms of the actual nitty gritty?
I mentioned in previous market talks that I'd looked at projections for credit, for example, fixed income markets in 2024. And I'd looked at this even just before the Fed came out with their pivot and before that rally in November. And I did look at the time. I remember thinking to myself that even under a recession, credit doesn't look too bad because yields were so high at the time. So you really are, you know, you're benefiting from interest government bond yields falling in a recession if by holding credit, you know, as well as the credit spreads would widen, but you'd be holding some underlying government bond yield as well. So that's, you were okay in just about every scenario. But after this amazing rally that we've seen, we start the year now, I think, with markets fully pricing in the soft landing. So embracing the soft landing. And if there is a soft landing, then I think you'll see reasonable returns. You know, you could see equity markets up 5-10%, who knows? You could see credit yield returning 5-10% as well. You know, those sort of reasonable years. But I think in any other scenario, in a recession, certainly, and even in the higher for longer, if the economy reignites and we send yields back higher again, I think under those circumstances, then markets are vulnerable and returns will not be particularly good. So from a couple of months ago, when it was almost every which way you could win, to now being, we've got all our chips on the soft landing bet, you know, that seems to be the case. And again, look, that could be the case and things could be totally fine this year, but it is a little bit skewed that way, I think.
So what you're effectively saying is some of the risks could come from the downside. And of course, 2024 seems to be the year of the election. And I wonder if some of that downside risk might come from the next election, which is Taiwan. Interesting times there, no?
Yep. So that the election there is on the 13th of January. That's going to be closely watched by the US, by China, of course, and the polls are very close. So we don't know who's going to be winning. If the DPP wins presidential election, that's the incumbent. But the presidential candidate previously has spoken about pushing more towards independence, but it's pulled back a little bit from that recently. So maybe wouldn't go the full whole way, which would be very tense. KMT, which is the other main party, that's been more closely aligned with Beijing in the past, and that would be perceived to be, I think, a less risky for markets. But yeah, again, who knows? And of course, at the same time, we're getting the start of the US election primaries, aren't we? And that, you know, I'm sure that's going to be part of the US election and part of the rhetoric there. But of course, all sorts of other stuff will be bubbling up too. So yeah, it's just one of many elections this year that could. And I was reading a good piece this morning, actually, summarizing the start of previous, the past 3 or 4 years, and what we were thinking at the start of those years, and actually what happened during it, from, you know, COVID to the regional banking crisis to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. All sorts of stuff always happens in any given year. So I think expect the unexpected was the way that they concluded their note, which I think is a good way of thinking about it.
Yeah, me too. I've read lots of unknown unknowns, so not terribly forward to those. Now, let's go back to what we do know. And a bit of a quiet week, as we've only just kissed goodbye to the relatives, haven't we? So the next data point, I suppose, is Friday, US non-farm payrolls out. What are we expecting there then, Ben?
So particularly the Federal Reserve, remember, would like to see inflation come down. So they are looking at the labour market, wanting the labour market to ease continuous. It remains, I think, too strong, the US labor market. It hasn't eased enough, but the Fed has made sort of moves towards that dovish pivot, so maybe they're happy. So the expectations would be for another growth of jobs in the US of about 170,000, which is sort of similar to what we've seen over the last few months. Personally, I think if it was lower than that, I think markets would like that, investors would like that. Don't want to see a really strong number, because then that might force the Fed to think again about their dovish pivot. And then all eyes will be on next week's US inflation number. So US CPI, core inflation currently running at about 4%. And that's 4% is too high, right? It has been coming down. So I think maybe as long as it just comes down a little bit more, we'll get our graphs out and we'll extrapolate and we'll all hope that it's going to head down towards that sort of target of 2-2.5%. But right now it is still too high. We also get some Eurozone flash inflation at the end of this week. Again, core inflation there, 3.5%. So again, that's too high. But as we discussed, the ECB seems to be a little bit more worried about it than the Fed at the minute.
All right. Well, from numbers to your number, and the number for the first part of January, I'll say, because I'm happy to say that we're recording two market talks for the month of January, as we hope to every month this year. So what's the number and why?
30 is my number, 30%. I mean, it's a little bit about the geopolitics. I mean, what is going on in the Middle East, and in particular for inflation and trade, 30 is the percentage of global container trade that passes through the Suez Canal. So that's nearly a third of all container trade. And right now we know that there's all sorts of issues in terms of getting ships through that area.
Yeah.
Big companies are pulling back, are deciding not to. And again, you know, this is bigger than markets, but from a market perspective, if trade starts to be restricted, has to be rerouted, we know what happens when trade is impacted by something, the COVID crisis, for example.
Exactly.
You start to see prices go up, you know, inflation starts to creep up. So hopefully that gets resolved. But if not, that's a large part of global trade that would be impacted, and something that, you know, central banks do not want to see is an increase in inflation.
Oh, crumbs. Yes, I hadn't thought about that. I hadn't thought about that angle on disruption. Well, look, happily, no disruption to our series of market talks for this year. Ben, thank you. Great to see you. Glad you had a good holiday, and great to hear all your views as usual. And we'll be back at the end of January with more thoughts on it all. So for now, from Ben and me, thank you. And thank you to all our listeners for listening. Thank you.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.